This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. The first case of COVID-19 in the U.S. was confirmed on January 20th, 2020. Feels like a decade ago, though it's only 1 year ago tomorrow. In these last 12 months of the pandemic, the virus has killed more than 20,000 people in the state and infected 1 million more. Many Americans have lost their jobs or changed the way they work and learn. Even our social norms have changed. No more handshakes, hugs, and once obscure public health terms like social distancing are now commonplace. Also this year, we've learned a lot about the virus, how it spreads, some of the best ways to treat it, and we've developed a COVID-19 vaccine at warp speed, as the program is called. Our next guest has put what she has learned working with COVID survivors into a book called The COVID-19 Survival Guide, How to Prepare for, Manage, and Overcome a Coronavirus Infection. Abigail Hardin is a rehabilitation psychologist at Rush University Medical Group. Abigail, thanks so much for being with us today on The 21st.
Thank you for having me.
And to lend his perspective as an emergency nurse, we're joined by Ron Krause. He's president of the Emergency Nurses Association and is an emergency department clinical nurse specialist based in Indianapolis who has more than 25 years of experience in emergency nursing. Ron, thank you for being with us today as well.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And listeners, we want to hear from you, how you have navigated a COVID-19 diagnosis, if you've had one. Do you still have lingering effects? If you have advice you want to share with others, or if you have questions for our guest, you can join the conversation. Give us a call at 800-222-9455. The number again is 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. That's at 21st Show. So, Abigail, I want to begin with you. What were you seeing in your work as a rehabilitation psychologist that inspired you to put together this guide?
Yeah, so, you know, I work in a hospital and I see hospitalized patients all the time. And when the pandemic started, my caseload really began to be primarily COVID patients and then ultimately only COVID patients. And so what I was noticing is that, you know, we had heard a lot over the course of the pandemic about survival rates, and people were understandably quite concerned about whether or not they were likely to survive COVID. But the truth is that even after survival, there was tremendous psychological need and tremendous need for rehabilitation following survival from COVID. And so I was seeing that every day and realizing, you know, surviving COVID is just the beginning, and seeing tremendous psychological need that was largely going unmet, and realized, you know, people need to know about this and they need to be given some tools so that they can get back on their feet after surviving.
I think you described in an interview, this book is equivalent to like the emergency kit that they tell you to put together in winter for your car. I mean, who is the intended audience for this?
Right, yeah, so it really is supposed to be for a broad audience. You know, I was thinking about all of the different ways that we can actually prepare for something like COVID-19 and being hospitalized with it by putting together something like a COVID kit, or by just being aware of what you can expect if you are in the unfortunate circumstance of needing to go to the hospital. And by taking that kind of precaution and by learning about it, patients can really put themselves in the best position to recover fully. And then the book also talks about, while you're in the hospital, different strategies you can use to get the most out of your care providers, how to navigate the medical system, which is very difficult. And then ultimately, once they're ready to go home, how to approach recovery.
Ron Krause, as you're the president, as I said, the president of the Emergency Nurses Association. And as I mentioned in the introduction to this segment, there's so much we've learned about this virus in the last 12 months. Can you reflect on how nurses were feeling at the beginning of the pandemic and where they are now?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think at the beginning it was, you know, like a lot of us, it was the unknown. You know, things were changing so fast. Information was coming at us at a rapid speed. I mean, I even tell people that we had memos in our department that had to be timestamped almost because, you know, day shift was doing something different than night shift because new information was coming out and how to protect us and keep us safe. You know, and now, you know, checking in on some of our staff and some of the department nurses across the country, we're still fighting it. We're still in it. Some areas of the country worse than others. But, you know, it's one of the things that it's almost like we all kind of come to a new norm. It's definitely taxing physically and mentally, but it's almost now we know what we have a better handle and more information and data to go by. So we know what we need to be doing each day, but, you know, continue on with those, you know, keeping all the PPE and everything on, but it's almost like we kind of come into this new normal, but certainly ready to be on the other side of it.
I've got to imagine that emergency department nurse is a pretty high stress profession, even when we're not in a global pandemic. I wonder if you've seen that playing out among your colleagues. You know, has that accelerated in the past year? Have you seen burnout?
Certainly impacting. It's chaotic, but I think, you know, we all chose the area because we love it. We love what we do. We love the fast-paced, many different things coming through the doors, and that's why we stick around in the emergency department. But yeah, it is a taxing, and we have to look for outlets and ways to make sure we deliver self-care as well. And, you know, the Emergency Nurses Association provides that as well for all of our members.
So, Abigail, how do you recommend? Let's start with some of the basics. And I should say we need to take a break here for our member stations in about 3 minutes. But let's start getting through some of these recommendations. How do you recommend that people prepare for a potential COVID diagnosis? And we should say this is assuming that people are wearing masks, not seeing others outside their household. You know, but sometimes even the most cautious people can get infected, right?
Right. Yeah. So there's those basic precautions like the social distancing and the masking that everyone needs to be continuing to follow, even though we are all anxiously awaiting vaccines. But, you know, what I recommend is that people try to avoid the urge to put your head firmly in the sand, and rather to think about COVID as something that is real and could happen to you and your family, and therefore to prepare for it. And some of the things that you can do that would be very, very helpful and really make the process a lot easier would be to set up advanced directives or living wills, things that you can bring with you to the hospital if needed, so that all your care providers and your family know exactly what you want should you need advanced therapies. I also recommend that people put together a COVID kit, and that has things in it like an extra pair of hearing aids or an extra pair of glasses. And the reason why things like that are so important is because those very small items can actually be the difference between having quite severe hospital delirium and not having delirium. And ultimately that affects recovery, it affects being able to get back to work quickly, it affects the entire recovery process. So there's lots of little things like that you can put together now that will, if the worst happens and you do have an infection, that it makes it easier for you and your family.
Can you expound on that and briefly? Because like I said, we need to take a break in about a minute, but hospital delirium, I don't think I've heard that phrase before.
Sure. Yeah. Hospital delirium is a change in thinking that can happen as a result of inflammation in the brain, and also as a result of some of the medications that can be given during the hospitalization. And it can cause a change in thinking where people are very confused, inattentive, and can even cause things like delusions and hallucinations. And preventing that relies on keeping people grounded and oriented to reality. And things like hearing aids and glasses can help them stay oriented and stay grounded in reality when that delirium is trying to creep up on them.
Fascinating. Okay, we need to take a break here. My guests are Abigail Hardin, who's the author of the COVID-19 Survival Guide, How to Prepare for, Manage, and Overcome a Coronavirus Infection. She's also a Rush University Medical Group rehabilitation psychologist. And we're also joined by Ron Krause, who's an emergency department clinical nurse specialist based in Indianapolis and the president of the Emergency Nurses Association. Listeners, we want to take your questions about preparing for COVID-19, surviving COVID-19, especially if you have had COVID-19 or been close to someone who's had it. We want to hear about your experiences. The number to call is 800-222-9455. That number again, 800-222-9455. You're listening to The 21st. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about surviving COVID for the rest of the hour today. My guests are Abigail Harden. She's a rehabilitation psychologist at Rush University Medical Group and the author of the COVID-19 Survival Guide, How to Prepare for, Manage, and Overcome a Coronavirus Infection. We're also speaking with Ron Krause, who's an emergency department clinical nurse specialist based in Indianapolis, also president of the Emergency Nurses Association. We want to hear from you, listeners, as well. 800-222-9455 is the number to call if you have a question about preparing for or surviving COVID. 800-222-9455 if you just want to share your experience of your COVID-19 diagnosis. Maybe you're one of the people that we've been hearing more and more about, the so-called long haulers, people who have long COVID lingering effects. And I want to start the last portion of our conversation here with a voicemail we got for this segment. This is Taylor Howard. She's a graduate student at the University of Illinois. She said she took all of the precautions like social distancing, mask wearing, only doing essential trips, and yet she still got COVID. And here is what Taylor shared about her experience.
I had COVID in November, and I can honestly say that that was a very scary experience, to say the least. I had a fairly severe case, and I just recall sleeping throughout the whole entire day, having breathing problems. When I had COVID, I had to go to the emergency room because I was concerned that I had pneumonia. You know, dealing with COVID-19 at the end of the semester for school was very hard. I had to get extensions for things. So it was just really rough. And then on top of that, being in isolation by yourself, it could be really bad for your mental health. So just overall, I had a really rough experience with COVID. My biggest advice is just to please take the pandemic seriously. And you think of more than yourself. There's people, your family members that are at higher risk or that have underlying conditions. So if anything, I would just say, please just take it seriously.
Thank you for sharing that, Taylor. We appreciate it. Abigail, I'm curious to hear your perspective on that as a psychologist, right? This virus has landed all types of people in the hospital, regardless of age, pre-existing conditions, and it can be really scary. How much do you address just the anxiety of a diagnosis in your book and the unknown that follows that?
Right. You know, I think that, you know, that voicemail is so poignant to me because, you know, there are lots of scary diseases out there, but there's a special type of anxiety that comes along with having an illness that is so new and that we know so little about. So that in and of itself is anxiety provoking. And then, you know, the other piece of this that we're clearly seeing in the research is that even after surviving COVID, whether you were in the hospital or not, there seem to be lingering mental health symptoms that are following people long-term. You know, earlier you alluded to the long haulers and, you know, they and also those who were hospitalized really deserve and need psychological attention. And those who were not hospitalized just because your illness was quote unquote mild does not mean that there won't be long-term consequences, particularly mental health symptoms.
And Ron, I wonder, do you see that anxiety among patients who get that COVID-19 diagnosis and show up in the emergency department?
Yeah, I'd echo what Abigail said. I mean, I think, you know, the unknown is what's really scary. And, you know, some of the patients that we're seeing in the emergency departments across the country are coming in having difficulty breathing and have to be maybe put on a mechanical ventilator in a matter of minutes. It's a rapid deterioration of some patients. So it's quite scary and anxious. And then the other thing that plays onto that is, you know, most hospitals have visitor restrictions. So patients are coming in and we have to call and give updates to their family members that might be waiting in their car out in the parking lot we can't have people in the waiting room due to social distancing and everything. So it just adds to a complexity of the entire experience.
So Ron, I also want to ask you about, we've been talking about preparing for COVID, and Abigail mentioned having, glasses and hearing aids and sort of a go bag, I guess you'd call it, ready to go if you need to go to the hospital. Ron, I wanted to ask you, are there other things people should have at home, like maybe, an oximeter to kind of monitor themselves before, to know whether they even need to go to the hospital?
Yeah, there's oximeters out there that people can get. One of the things, there's the myriad of symptoms that COVID causes, and it causes difference in different people. And that's what really is frustrating for a lot of individuals. But, really seek out with your physician. And when you really want to seek a medical care in the emergency department, if you're having trouble breathing, if you have persistent pain or pressure in your chest, new confusion, your inability to stay awake, or you get like bluish lips or face or, confusion, but really it is the breathing that is really getting attacked here. So if you have those symptoms, you definitely need to seek medical care.
And Abigail, Ron mentioned a moment ago the isolation that can come in the hospital, right? Because so many hospitals have visitor restrictions right now. What can a family member do if they're, if their relative or friend is in the hospital? What can they do to try and help when they can't be there in person?
Right. There's actually a lot that a relative or a friend could do. One of the things that I recommend to family members over the phone all the time is to, if the patient came to the hospital with a phone, is to get on FaceTime and just provide emotional support and grounding. The other thing patients and family members can do for patients is to help the healthcare team know when something feels off. So the healthcare team doesn't know your loved one as well as you do. And so you might be particularly sensitive to things like changing cognitive status, a change in personality, people seeming unusually withdrawn or unusually agitated. And that kind of information can be very important for the healthcare team to know. So staying in contact with the patient while they're in the hospital, being on FaceTime. And then one other thing I recommend is if you have young children at home, to get them involved too. Give them a job that they can do to help. And what I mean by that is give them an assignment like making a get well card or a poster that could possibly be brought into the hospital, given to the nurse and put up in the patient's room while they're recovering. And that way everyone feels like they're contributing to recovery and everyone feels involved.
That's a great suggestion. Let me reintroduce my guests. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with an emergency nurse and a rehabilitation psychologist about what we've learned about the coronavirus and how we can prepare for a potential diagnosis and life after a COVID diagnosis. We're joined by Abigail Harden, author of the COVID-19 Survival Guide, How to Prepare for, Manage, and Overcome a Coronavirus Infection. She's also a Rush University Medical Group rehabilitation psychologist. And we're also joined by Ron Krause, who's an emergency department clinical nurse specialist based in Indianapolis and the president of the Emergency Nurses Association. Listeners, our phones are open at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. I want to go now to line four, Amy in Urbana. Thanks for calling in to the 21st.
Hello, thank you. So I had it at the end of November, beginning of December. I actually contracted it from my grandfather, and typically you would see or hear about the opposite. He ultimately passed away from it.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. As I contracted it, one of the things that, there were a few things that helped me. I had what you would call very mild symptoms. But if I learned anything, it was drink tons of water. I mean, I was so dehydrated. Drinking tons of water was helpful. Also, if you have family or friends who can make aware that you're going through this, especially if you're in isolation. I was in a hotel by myself for a total of 16 days. And so I would do video chats with friends. I would do, I would even call Carl if I was feeling really anxious or overwhelmed, especially with my grandfather's passing. There was just several layers of complexity going on.
And Carl's the hospital you're referring to?
Yes. Yeah. So I would, when I felt like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do, I would just call the patient, nurse emergency line or non-emergency line, and they helped me through it. It was amazing. I don't want to be a long hauler, but I do feel like I might be slightly headed in that direction. It definitely makes you more emotional. I'm super weepy sometimes, and I have really bad brain fog. So those are things that, you know, when we do decide to be more social with other people, that's a risk that we are taking in doing so, that my life is kind of mildly, majorly impacted by the fact that I can't think clearly. So those were just some things I want to share.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm sorry about your grandfather. I'm sorry about your own illness. And thank you for calling in, and I wish you the best of luck on your recovery.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Abigail, I wonder what your response is to hearing that caller.
Yeah, I am so happy that Amy called, because hearing these accounts from actual survivors is so helpful for future people who may go through this. And, you know, she talked a little bit about the brain fog and the long haul syndrome. And, you know, what I want to say is that it's clear, it's already clear from all of the patients like Amy who are speaking up and telling healthcare professionals what they need, that, you know, we're going to have this large cohort of survivors who have some form of long haul symptoms. And this isn't really new to the medical field. We've known about post-viral syndromes like chronic fatigue syndrome for years. And we're aware that viral infections can cause these kinds of long-term problems, both physical problems and emotional problems. Remember that the head is connected to the rest of the body. So anything that affects the body can affect the brain and thus the emotions. And so what we need to do now is start putting together a way to handle this large influx of need by putting together multidisciplinary COVID clinics, making sure that the full body is attended to, including the brain, including emotions, so that folks like Amy, you know, if those symptoms bother her long term, that they can get help when they need it.
Ron, I want to ask you about, Amy was not sick enough to go to the hospital. And a lot of people who get COVID don't end up, probably even most people, right, don't end up in the hospital. Do you have recommendations for things people can do at home? For example, our attention was drawn to a Twitter thread from somebody who said they were a nurse, you know, mentioned just walking around your house, as hard as that might be, or certain breathing techniques.
Yeah, certainly. I think, you know, if your symptoms aren't warranted that you go to the emergency department or go to the hospital. I mean, treating your symptoms, I think Amy brought up a good point. You know, she felt thirsty all the time and felt dehydrated. So lots of fluids, just care for any of those symptoms, et cetera, that you may need. You know, get a lot of rest. I've heard a lot of people they found their own streaming and they just streamed. But I think that Amy brought up, and you can just hear in her voice, I'm sorry for her grandfather's loss of her grandfather. You can hear in her voice, you know, isolation and 16 days in the hotel room. And that's very real. And I think Abigail brings up some great points on how to care for that, you know, and reach out to each other. And, you know, it's a difficult illness.
Abigail, I want to end. We need to end our conversation. There's just a couple of minutes left in our program now, but can you just talk briefly about why it's important for a psychologist to be an important part of COVID-19 care? You've touched on this a couple of times, but just sort of a concluding thought to leave our listeners with.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that being ill, whether you're hospitalized or not, it has tremendous psychological effects. And, you know, our medical care system does a really great job of saving lives, and it deserves all the credit for that. Our medical system in general attends less carefully to things like cognitive changes and emotional changes. But as your caller pointed out, those are the things that really affect quality of life long term. And so, you know, as a country, we are going to have millions and millions of people who need those needs addressed too, in order to be able to get back to their full quality of life, going back to work, loving their families, going back to their hobbies. And that does require a behavioral specialist like a psychologist. And unfortunately, there's not enough of us. You know, there's only about 2,500 rehabilitation psychologists in the country. So there's not enough psychologists in hospitals right now. And that worries me greatly. It's something that as a medical system, we need to work on so that everyone with COVID, long haul or not, gets the care that they need.
Abigail Harden is a rehabilitation psychologist at Rush University Medical Group and the author of the COVID-19 Survival Guide, How to Prepare for, Manage, and Overcome a Coronavirus Infection. We've also been speaking with Ron Kraus, who's an emergency department clinical nurse specialist based in Indianapolis and president of the Emergency Nurses Association. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is all the time we have for today. Before we go, I want to mention that we will not be on the air tomorrow. Instead, this NPR station will be carrying live coverage of the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. We're planning to be back live on Thursday. We want to hear from you about what you're hoping to see and hear out of the new administration. Leave a voicemail at 217-300-2121. The number again, 217-300-2121. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.